Hi, this is Chris Evans recording a Storage Unpacked podcast. This week I'm on the road and I'm spending some time with Datrim in Sunnyvale in California. And I believe you're very close to the Google office, is that right?
The Google Cloud.
Google Cloud office.
Probably one of the last few buildings standing that is not on Google.
Oh, okay, fair enough. So let me just introduce the two people who you just heard talking there. We've got Sazala Reddy, who's CTO for Datrim. Hi, Sazala.
Hi, very nice to meet you, Chris.
And we've got Tushar, and Tushar, your name, surname is too hard for everybody to pronounce, so you can pronounce it if you want, you can say what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Chris, I'm Tushar Agrawal, and I'm a director of products here at Datrim.
Great, wonderful. Okay, so what we thought we'd do is, you're a relatively new company, and you're focused on a new type of architecture, which perhaps we might call an evolution of HCI. And what we wanted to do is really take people through what the architecture is, where the company came from, why the product is different, so they can understand why you give them something that is better than traditional HCI today, and how they can adopt that in their environment and what benefits they can see. So, Sazala, why don't you start off by giving us a bit of background on the company and the technology and at a high level, and so that people can understand what you're all about.
Sure, Chris. Thanks for having us on this podcast. So before I describe kind of what we do, I want to talk about like what we found. So we talked to thousands of customers, and if you go to the data center, you see the following pains for the customers. One is that they're trying to consolidate and have very low latency for their data, for their mission critical applications like databases and VDI. The second one they're trying to do is that if you look at any data center, they have four or five different pieces of hardware like backup and vendor optimization devices, backup software, proxy servers. It's actually very complex. And then ultimately somebody in the company has said, let's go look at cloud. Which is, by the way, as you know, it's not cheap and it's very complex. So they have all these moving pieces, and the world is moving to a modern place. If you look at the iPhone, it's easy to use, but still the data center is kind of behind. So we thought about how do we move forward? How do we make some of these pains go away and move to the very modern place?
So from your perspective, in terms of your background, which companies have you worked in previously, and how and what experience are you bringing to that solution or your solution?
So previously, I worked for a company called Data Domain.
I've never heard of them. Don't know who they are.
So Data Domain kind of was the pioneer of doing Dedup-based backup appliances. It changed the game because we invented a way to do variable size Dedup. And Dedup was not even a word people knew. And kind of when in initially stages of selling Datrim products, people would say go away because they don't know what it is. But now it's everywhere.
Yeah. And Data Domain is seen as still the leader in that.
It still is a leader in that space because fundamentally we did two things at Data Domain which I'm very proud of. One is that we invented this technology which kind of really made a change to the economics. And secondly, what we did was the simplicity of the product. That's why it's successful even today, even after like 5 years after EMC bought it. Yeah. So generally when big companies buy it, it tends to die. But in this case, it tends to live because it's a very simple product.
So in terms of your platform then, could you give me a brief description of what it is and how it's different to say traditional HCI or traditional deployments?
Sure, want to get it?
Sure thing, Sazala. So I think, as Sazala said, our focus has been to look at our data from its lifecycle perspective. And so kind of, what do people do with data in their data center? They run that, they want to protect it, and lately they also want to use cloud so that they can post it to the cloud and kind of keep it there for accessing it when they actually need it on the fly and pay-as-you-go. What Datrim does is actually provide a solution so that customers can do all of these three things on a consolidated converged platform. And so we offer tier one hyperconvergence-like architecture, which actually scales performance and capacity and provides sub-millisecond latencies for all of the applications running on it. We provide integrated backup in that platform, which allows customers to store in a very efficient way copies of their data and instantly restart them when they need it. Restart, not restore. And we provide an integrated way for customers to get to the public cloud without having to learn or know anything about the public cloud interface itself. So kind of all integrated, delivered from the same UI.
So if I look at, say, traditional HCI, I see a consolidation of both server and storage into a common platform. You haven't quite taken that approach, and your architecture is slightly different.
Right. So convergence is not necessarily just about hardware convergence. It's about the lifecycle of how the customer workflow is. That's the what you really care about. You know, it's not about putting in the same box. Anybody can do that. I mean, we can put everything into one giant sheet metal and ship it.
Yeah.
But it's the convergence of how easy it is for the customer to like do their daily operations. So what do they want to do in a converged platform? They want to run their applications at high speed. Don't have to think about performance. They want to just manage backups as simple as that, and then they want to have a way to a bridge to the cloud. So that's the convergence we talk about. And so if you look at the evolution of convergence, like a little bit of the technology, so there was SAN, the old style, you know, there's a SAN LUN, whatever, yep. Right? That's the 2000 model. And then after that, Google produced a paper in 2003 called MapReduce. The idea was that it's you can put DAS servers together and combine them together and form this giant cluster. That was a paper they published, but soon they realized that that doesn't scale, and they moved on from that. But unfortunately, the world has adopted that as a way to do hyperconvergence, that you have these uniform boxes which has DAS in it. The challenge with that is that it tends to then be wobbly. You can't scale performance independently of capacity. So when you have, it sounds good on paper, like look at the picture, but this kind of issues like about the day two operations, how you manage it, then that becomes a challenge. So having started a little later in the, you know, in the stage of this evolution, like in 2012, we got a chance to look at all of these things. And hence, we evolved into a place where you need to be able to scale capacity and performance independently of each other. If you look at Amazon, they don't do HCI. If you look at Google, they don't do HCI anymore. Nobody does HCI anymore. If you look at the Open Compute Initiative, it's a little bit of a disaggregation because that's the only way you can be able to scale independently some of these angles.
So let's just talk about what that HCI scaling issue means in that sense, because if you are deploying many, many boxes, you're deploying a box that's got a fixed number of CPUs, a fixed amount of memory, a fixed amount of disk space, and performance within that disk. Yeah. And obviously, every time you want to scale out, you put a new node in, and everything scales. So you have to buy one of everything as part of that.
Yes.
And that's where you're saying the bottleneck occurs. That's one bottleneck.
That's one bottleneck in terms of the customer sizing problem. Sizing problem is one. That is a issue. If you talk to anybody in HCI world, customers, they say the sizing is a challenge because how do you size this? There's no single way to size your compute and storage. And every customer is different, and how they grow is different. The sizing issue. So beyond that, it's not just sizing issue. It's the, because these boxes are independent of each other, stateless, so you have to have three copies of data so that you can tolerate one node failure versus two node failures, right? So then you end up having three copies. So then if you look at it, because you have three copies, you have to have three times the number of disks or flash, whatever. And you need three times the number of CPU memory to manage these things. And because you have to maintain three copies, you have to talk to every other node, talks to every other node to keep the copies of it. So you basically have fundamentally increased the network traffic. You increase the amount of CPU and compute memory, disks, everything. You just increased everything to a disproportionate number. And because of this, it becomes a little wobbly that if every node talks to every other node, there is going to be noisy neighbor problems. And especially for an IT administrator, how do they fix the problem when somebody complains that, hey, there's this giant VM causing everybody a pain?
Yeah. So traditional HCI has issues around that scaling, around that design in the way that it was originally conceived. How have you done it differently? What is it that you've said you're going to do differently in your architecture?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's also important to realize that in the hyper-converged architecture, what used to be stateless compute nodes have now become stateful, right? And it also means that whenever a host has to be patched or maintained, there is data rebirths or the data at risk problems. What Datrium has done is split the two key functions that, you know, are performed by a traditional storage array and split them across two different node types. So we have a performance tier on our compute nodes, which is where the DVX software runs. And that takes care of providing the local data store onto the hosts. It also provides all of our data services, like deduplication, compression, inline erasure coding, et cetera, et cetera. But we have not put the durable data on the hosts. We keep the durable data in a separate node, which we call data node. And this split architecture allows our customers to add performance when they want by adding different compute nodes, or add capacity when they want by adding data nodes at the back. And so you can now scale them independently at the same time keeping your compute nodes stateless.
Okay, so when I've looked at your architecture diagrams and so on, it tends to be drawn with a single storage unit. So my immediate thought when I looked at it was, great, I can have lots of compute nodes, each of which are using some sort of cache to give you that performance tier. But the drawing shows me one single storage node. Now, clearly that's not the case, and storage can be scaled as much as the compute nodes, if I'm correct.
We have evolved our drawings.
Okay.
The better now.
Good. Because that's the point of the architecture, is that both parts can be scaled independently.
Absolutely. Yes. So we started out with a single data node, which is probably why you see most of those images out there on the internet. But in August of last year, we announced a massive increase in our scalability. We can now support up to 128 compute nodes and up to 10 data nodes. And customers can start from a single compute node and a single data node, which gives about 100 terabytes of effective capacity, all the way to 10 data nodes, which provides about 1.7 petabytes of effective capacity with up to 128 compute nodes, all of them in a single system.
Okay, so how does that affect customers' performance then? What are they seeing from this architecture that's radically different in terms of performance too?
Great, so there's two things. So because we have flash close to the VMs, right next to the VMs, and because it's deduped and compressed, so you tend to get about 5x, like let's say you get 5x average. So 1 terabyte SSD becomes like 5 terabytes or 10 terabytes of SSD. At that point, it's no longer a cache. All the data is living there. So the advantage is that you get laptop-like experience. So if you buy an all-flash array, you're still going over the wire, and people say, hey, the wire is fast, but actually it's not about that. So there's something called the Little's Law, like the shopping. If you go to a supermarket, there's a shopping line. Even each person may be fast, but then it takes a while to get everybody processed. So the cube depth matters. So, but by having the flash next to your VM, you get laptop experience. And actually, our customers notice that when they move from all flash, like all flash LUN array kind of to us, the end users just come by and tell the IT admin how much their life has changed. The spinning wheel is gone. Databases want low latency applications. So that's kind of what we talk about, low latency mission critical applications, the VDI, databases. VDIs kind of doesn't really work well if you don't have a good experience for the end users. So okay. We have very good success stories.
Okay, so a lot of people talking about NVMe today. Is that NVMe storage in your nodes? How is that currently implemented?
Our data nodes have two flavors of them. One flavor is hard drives, and another flavor is SSDs. So NVMe, ultimately, it's about how fast can you write to these devices. So because we've done a couple of things, we use something called LFS. It's a Locksuture File System. It's a paper by Mendel, who's the founder of VMware. So it's a popular paper in the sense that if you can convert every random write into a sequential write, you can use any device you want, and it'll perform amazingly well. So even SSDs don't like random writes. So you can convert any of these devices into really high performance devices. So our random write performance, we believe we are probably one of the best out there in terms of random write performance.
Isn't that what we would have called log structured file years ago?
We did. Actually, it is log structured file system.
Okay, it is that. So.
Yeah, it is that. So we kind of made it, so that's the initial idea. What we have done is that we've taken that and built a distributed log structured file system, right? At that scale, how do you make it work? And that's kind of what our innovations are about. How do you make that scale? How do you provide compression dedupe on top of it?
Yeah, okay. Just to add to that, I think we have supported NVMe from day one. And that's, again, kind of goes back to one of the key core premises of our architecture is we always looked at compute node as this fast-paced innovation vehicle where you could always put in the latest and greatest of technologies. We made it stateless so you could try out stuff and it failed, no problem, your data was safe. And what we could do from the very beginning is have our customers bring commodity flash, you know, be it MLC drives all the way to NVMe drives, and they could put them in our servers and get the lowest latency for their applications that they wanted. So we always support NVMe, and NVMe closest to server cores is the fastest it can get. So we've always supported that from the very beginning.
So okay, so let's move on to think about how this looks from a customer's perspective, and then we'll deep dive into some of the architectural features that you've spent a lot of time on, and we'll come back to that. So imagine I'm a customer who builds out a traditional hypervisor VMware, perhaps, environment. Your software, your infrastructure looks like an NFS share to that vSphere environment?
Yes.
Yep. Obviously, talk me through what happens, for instance, if one of those compute nodes dies, and what does or doesn't have to happen in order to bring that workload up somewhere else.
Right. So if you configured HA in VMware, it's like any other data store. The VMs will eventually come up in the other hosts out there, and you can actually pull out the hosts. It's dead. You can just put new ones in. That's fine too. So there is no change in terms of the customer behavior they expect from a traditional array in that model.
But if we compare that to HCI. If an HCI node dies,
yeah.
There's a lot of data copying. There's a lot of data moving around in order to rebuild the stuff that's lost.
That's right.
But you don't have to do that.
You don't have to do that. So that's such an advantage we have is that it's actually a significant advantage. Like even if you patch a vCenter or VMware, you have to reboot all these hosts.
Yeah.
And if it takes too long, then you end up with having a host down event, which means that your data is now at risk. You start rebuilding. And that's actually rebuilding. You see, data wants to be sticky and not move around that much, right? It's not like networking where you can change stuff. Data wants to be sticky and stay stable and stay durable. So making all these nodes be stateful actually is a challenge you have to face.
So we talked about some of the hardware there and some of the components that are in the service. Explain to me the impact that you have on backup, because that might not be one that's as obvious to people initially when they're looking at a traditional sort of solution.
So we come, some of us in Datrium come from data domain. So we kind of had a good chance to look at a lot of customers' backup problems. So you need to start with some empathy. If you don't have empathy for that problem, you don't think it's cool. Like if you are working in an all-flash array, you think that's a very boring problem. It's actually very interesting because it actually, if you look at the customer, they spend a significant amount of time trying to back up and then to restore stuff. So that's kind of where we thought there's an opportunity for us to help the customer simplify it. So, and also if you look at the workflow of backup, the RTO is slow. The RPO is slow, and then in time to restore, everybody's afraid of restoring because it takes hours and days to restore. So we said, okay, how do we solve that? It's not about the hardware, it's about how do we solve that fundamentally. So what we have done is that because of the ability for us to scale the capacity independently and very efficiently, and so we are able to provide this backup-like features. Like we have a catalog in our system, like just like backup software does. And you can set up policies which are very easy to use, like name pattern matching policies. Because once you have a lot of VMs, you can't manage them one by one. You need a grouping, high-level grouping policy. So we've kind of built that. We have a lot of ways to find and discover objects in our catalog. So we provide all these features, and ultimately restore. It's all about restore. It's all about recovery. Restores are a click away. Like so, with the way we say is that don't restore, just do a restart. Like it's all a click away from how you wanna just restart something.
Okay, so Tushar, how does that look to the user in the interface? How would they see that? Is that built into vSphere? Is it a separate console?
Yeah,
What's the experience
absolutely,
for the user?
Absolutely. So the Datrium DVX UI comes as a complete vCenter plugin. And so for VMware customers that are using VMware, they basically have one interface where they can use vCenter for everything. Be it running their applications, getting great performance from DVX, backing up, and going to the cloud. We also have a standalone UI, which is important because we also support customers that want to run us on a bare metal Linux or a KVM virtual machine platform. And so that's important, and they can just log into our GUI and manage that aspect of it. So those are the two ways that customers can look at
it. And I think that's worth pointing out that this isn't just a vSphere solution. This could be bare metal. You support a whole range of different scenarios.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So what we do support is obviously VMware vSphere is the bulk of our deployments. Late last year, we added the ability to support Red Hat virtualization. We also added the ability for customers to support open source KVM running on CentOS. And we also enhanced our product to actually run on bare metal Linux so that we could support bare metal persistent Docker container volumes. And so you can now imagine that not only can you converge all the way from primary to backup and cloud, but you can also do that across VMware, Red Hat, and Docker containers.
So could people run more than one hypervisor at the same time in your environment? Could they have like two or three nodes of vSphere, two or three nodes of something else, but still have the same storage infrastructure and scale the two pieces out independently?
The answer is yes. So we've had a few customers that really like the promise of this consolidation, and they are running VMware virtual machines as separate clusters. And Red Hat KVM virtual machines have separate clusters, and then a few hosts running Docker containers, all in the same solution.
All in the same, because I think that's a really interesting one. That if you look at it, a lot of people will think that HCI today, I have to put a cluster of vSphere in, or I have to build out a different cluster of something else, and then my data isn't consistent across both platforms, and now I've got islands of data. It sounds to me like you're creating effectively an infrastructure where people can just plug hardware in that's either the storage capacity or storage with compute and scale those both separately and deploy whatever they want on them.
Yep,
that is correct. It's about how do you consolidate and simplify?
Let's dig down into some of the technology now, because there are some interesting pieces in the technology that I know you've been working on really hard to differentiate it from traditional HCI. And the first one that we've got on our list, and that's definitely worth going back and talking about, is global dedupe. Do you want to take us through that?
Yeah. Sazana? So as we all know that, you know, there is so to get data efficiencies, you need to do a few things. One is that not do three-way mirroring, you need to do erasure coding. That's a different topic, but I can talk about that, how we've done it really well. The other one is compression. Compression is very, very hard to do, actually. If you look at how people have done it, actually, it's very hard to do compression. It looks like a simple thing, but actually, it results in variable size blocks. So you need a Luxshare file system fundamentally to make compression work. It's a very interesting topic by itself. And then dedupe. So dedupe sounds like a simple thing, like, hey, you just have blocks and you dedupe against them. But having spent like a decade studying dedupe, there are so many interesting ways to do this, so many interesting ways to slice the dice on this. So the dedupe has its obvious advantages is that you can basically get savings locally. So the way we've done it is that the dedupe is on the data nodes, for sure. The dedupe on the local flash cache, on the SSDs on the local. And also the other part of that is that we have global dedupe. Global dedupe is a sense that if you have two sites or a cloud instance, they both independently do dedupe. But when you transfer data from site A to site B, you only send the minimum. So it kind of eliminates the need for WAN optimization devices. Not many people have this. So if you look at somebody claiming dedupe, they don't have these this global dedupe that where you can do transfers across sites.
Yeah, so but it's that global dedupe that's the key piece there, I think.
Yes.
Because that enables some of the other features you're doing with your technology, like your cloud implementation.
Yeah.
So without that, you couldn't do things like that.
So the thing a lot of our customers have asked about and looking at is that they don't want to maintain a second data center. So they need a way to do DR to the cloud. To do DR to the cloud, you need a backup to the cloud first, step one. So to do backup to the cloud, you need an efficient implementation of your backups to live in the cloud. And Amazon is very expensive. So one option is that you do weekly fulls, just like you do tapes, and that's what a lot of the backup vendors do. They do weekly fulls back to the cloud. So you end up sending a lot of data every week to the cloud and having to pay all that money to the cloud. So in the cloud, the emperor has no clothes. If you don't have a good implementation of dedupe and compression, it shows up. You can't lie anymore.
Yep.
That's the way we look at it. So what we have done is that we provided a service which is just easy to use, and it has compression and dedupe built into it. So you only send the bare minimum to the cloud ever. You also get back the bare minimum ever if you need to restore something.
Okay, and that's the benefit of the dedupe.
Yeah, the global dedupe actually is like it has all these benefits. There's actually additional benefits. I'll talk about it in a minute, which is just beyond the data efficiencies.
Okay, that was definitely one very, very significant part of the architecture. Now, another part, I think, is your data integrity. Why don't you take us through that?
Yeah, so by doing global dedupe, the way we have done it is that we use crypto hashes. Then what we do is that every object in the system, like every VM or every VM snapshot, is a list of crypto hashes. So independently of software, it doesn't matter, software could have bugs, whatever, but given a piece of data, a VM is a list of crypto hashes. It cannot be wrong. You can check it multiple times. It has to be correct. If there is a problem, you can detect it and kind of go fix it. The same thing, if you're gonna have mobility across the cloud, you're gonna have to send these VM or VM snapshots to a different place. So when you send, you also send the crypto hashes with it. So independently, both sides can verify that I believe I got what I think I should be getting, no matter what the software bugs are. Because ultimately, software does have bugs, but by checking independently these things, by the crypto hashes, you can be 100% sure that I got what I believe I got. Otherwise, you can reject that transfer and say, try again.
So when you say crypto hash, can you explain exactly what that means for anybody who might not understand that technology?
So you take a piece of data and let's say a 4K block or a 512 byte block, and you compute a crypto hash on top of it. And what that gives you is this unique crypto hash for every piece of data you have. That gives you, firstly, a way to do dedupe, that two blocks which are the same will end up with the same crypto hash. You can say, aha, I found something, I can eliminate the duplicate of it. That's kind of what the crypto hash is all
okay.
about.
Okay, and when you say crypto hash rather than just hash, are they just the same thing, or
there is some technical details to it, like on a hash, it's about having a hash which is not has collision free properties. That's kind of what the crypto hash
means. The crypto piece means. Yeah. Okay. So rather than have the risk that there might be collisions,
yes.
You're saying it's totally unique.
That it's totally
unique.
It
will always generate something unique.
That is
okay.
right.
Perfect.
That's the property of the crypto hash.
Okay.
The other thing we have done because of the crypto hashes is that, because all the verification is that we verify every VM snapshot multiple times a day in the system. So the advantage is that if there's a problem, you'll know about it. That's what we believe having Paranoia brings you, is that level of checking, that level of data integrity into the system. No other vendor does this.
And without that, I guess that's where scalability becomes an issue, because you can't have data corruption at that level and want to try and scale, because otherwise you'll always run into problems.
Yeah, you can depend on luck. Software has bugs and it can depend on luck. Or we decided to do something differently is that we want to check, we want to be sure. So every system out there checks all the time. So it reduces the probability of software bugs.
Okay, great. So now if I was a customer and I wanted to come along and take this technology from you, Tushar, and I was going to implement it, what would I be looking to do? I buy a set of nodes, would there be a minimum? I think we might have touched that on that already, but let's go back over it again. Mm-hmm. You know, exactly what's the sort of the customer experience for using your technology?
Yeah, sure. So we get a lot of customers who come to us and say, I've already made this huge investment in my server platform, and I want a modern VM-centric, fast, converged platform that I can use in my own data center. And so we work great with them because we have an open architecture where they can bring their own compute nodes. We ship to them the data nodes, which provides the durable capacity. And we license them for the host software, which is the DVX host software that runs on all of those compute nodes, leverages the local flash that's deployed on each of them and provides this NFS data store that can write, that VMs can write.
Okay, so if a customer wanted to, they could buy the hardware from you, but if they already have their own supply that they're used to using, as long as it meets a certain set of minimum requirements?
Absolutely, and I think we have a very minimal set of requirements because we treat the compute nodes as stateless. All we need is to make sure that they have 800 gigabytes of SSD capacity on that compute node, and then that's it.
Okay.
We also support, as you rightly said, our own compute nodes, and this is important for customers that are looking for end-to-end support from Datrium. In that case, we do sell our own compute node, which are an OEM version of, you know, publicly available servers, but we stand behind those servers all the way for hardware issues as well.
Okay, and do you prefer one model or the other? Are you making lots of money out of the compute node, or is it literally just that's a service for people?
So it's interesting. We have a blend, but I would say that about 3/4 of our sales today are on the model where people bring their own compute nodes.
Okay, all right.
And that's kind of important because that was kind of what the architecture was designed to accomplish by keeping these compute nodes stateless. And so we see a lot of customers that are happy to use their own servers and just kind of get the benefits of Datrium on top of them.
Okay, so from an integration perspective, what does the customer have to do to that version of, say, vSphere? How do you integrate? You know, some vendors will run a VM that runs the storage service on there. Mm. Some will use kernel plugins. Mm. You know, how do you implement that to that level?
So we have a VIB we install. So it's very easy. You click on the host and, you know, from a UI, and then say just install our VIB. A VIB installs straight away, and then it runs over there and it provides NFS. So it's kind of a little different.
Yeah, but that's not an unusual implementation to use a plugin into the hypervisor in that way. And in actual fact, I would imagine that's more efficient than running a VM in the hypervisor.
It's not about efficiency, it's about simplicity.
Okay.
If you run a VM, you have to manage it, all that stuff.
True.
If you run it in this VIB format, then you don't see it, you don't manage it. It's kind of transparent to everybody. And then it also doesn't crash your kernel, whatever, right? So it has a lot of properties of simplicity to it.
Right, great, okay. So let's move on and talk about version 4, which I believe has just been recently released.
Yeah.
What have you brought out in the version 4 release of the software?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, before I kind of get into 4.0, let me just kind of summarize what we have delivered over the last 1 year, because this is the fourth release in sort of what's been a very busy year. Early last year, we delivered a platform to support snapshots, replication, and encryption. Each of them, we kind of covered great granularity of sort of what you can snap and very efficient way of storing those snapshots and very fast way to operate on those snapshots, be it clone, be it replication, be it restores. Right. We then delivered the ability to support multiple hypervisors. We kind of expanded the platform from VMware up to Red Hat, KVM. That was our 3.0 release. And we also added the ability to scale our platform massively from one data node all the way to 10 data nodes in that release. With 4.0, if you kind of look at our trajectory, 1.0 was all about great performance, tier 1 HCI. 2.0 and 3.0 were about, you know, backup and kind of getting to the place where people can store a lot of backups and kind of protect their data. With 4.0, we are bringing the third leg of our story forward, which is the cloud story. So one of the big features that come out with 4.0 is our Cloud DVX product, which just allows customers to, with a click of a button, store their data in AWS. It also brings additional tier 1 and capabilities with support for Oracle Rack Virtualized.
Okay.
We have a great story there because we can support true N-1 host failure tolerance against HCI, which maybe can support 1 or 2. We also have additional resiliency features in the form of what we call peer cache mode. Again, going back to the stateless host architecture, we can now support the loss of all SSDs on a single host, but the VMs still keep running. And we do that by immediately switching to using cache on a neighboring host in the system. And in that manner, we give the administrator the time to actually do a planned
maintenance. I guess it would be a clean shutdown or clean migrate of that VM onto somewhere
else. Exactly, yeah. As against other platforms where it would just stop working. We've also added a bunch of capabilities around manageability. We've added audit trail capability for our customers to now quickly get an understanding of what actions were performed on the system, be it via the UI, be it via CLI, be it via APIs. We've expanded our publicly available API, interfaces in the sense of supporting snapshots, clone, and replication, delivered via a Python SDK, but using REST APIs underneath. We've also certified our blanket encryption product, which is very unique in the industry. It's 100% software-based encryption, does not require any external key manager. The key management is built in.
Okay.
We've now certified that encryption with FIPS 142. So that federal customers and customers that have data privacy regulations and compliance requirements can deploy this with confidence.
Okay, so just very quickly before we wrap up, take me through the cloud side of things because people may not have entirely understood what you're offering there. Mm-hmm. Today, it's the ability to back up data into the cloud and bring it back. Mm-hmm. But you're not at this point offering the ability to run my workloads in the cloud.
Absolutely, that is absolutely correct. So what we provide today is a very simple way for customers to use their on-premises DVX and send snapshots of their virtual machines to be stored in an AWS S3. We do that in a very as a service, so customer doesn't really need to manage anything in AWS. It's TDP aware, like we discussed earlier, and it offers great RTO because you only send unique data out. And so your recovery is pretty fast.
So is that the customer's AWS account or is that yours? It's still theirs.
The we work on the customer's AWS account. Kind of goes back to the open convergence architecture again. Is we want to allow customers to bring their own cloud and not have any markups on the cloud infrastructure on top of it. So we support customer bringing their own AWS account.
Okay, well, that's been really, I think, a fantastic opener for people to understand your technology, and there's going to be a lot of things they'll want to follow up on. I'll provide some links on the website so that on the podcast website so they can go and see some additional background, and obviously we'll make sure that's all available for people. But if they want to stalk you online or follow you on Twitter, do you use social media at all? Where can they find you?
So clearly we have Datrium as our social media handle.
Yep.
And my name is Unique Sazala.
Yep.
I'm available on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, whatever. I have a unique name, so it's easy to find me. Just Google for me, you'll find me.
Okay.
Sure. Same, absolutely same here. So at Datrium, if you want to follow Datrium, at @Tushar_AGR, that's my Twitter handle, and we are all pretty active there. So happy to kind of chat with you.
Great. Thanks for your time, and look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.